Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaveryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So we are on the chapter 7, and last point we went through did we read the third one? How should a disciple perceive a spiritual master? We did, yeah?
We read the first page.
The whole page we read, yeah?
Yeah, we read it to Buddha.
We read, what if someone...
Oh, yeah, we did the Sajjas. Okay, so... So we did the first four. Any questions on that? Anything? Awesome. Who is running? Okay. Anyway, you can hear? Yeah. No, great. Okay, as I was mentioning before, then we are putting certain points also from other books, like Madhurya Kadambini, then Bhajana Rahasya, Shriharanam Chintamani. So now, when I come across some important point, which we may already have missed because it's going to be before, so then I just bring it up here. And then I have just came across one very, very elaborate description of Vaishnava Para. So I think that's very important information for us to share here. So it's from Madhurya Kadambini by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And then he writes about Vaishnava Parat as such. If one, even accidentally, commits this offense against the Vaishnava, he must bitterly repent for his low behavior. Just as poison is contracted by poison, similarly, the offender, having set aflame his spiritual life with blasphemy, must be punished in the fire of contrition. The offender must go and fall at the feet of the devotees he reveal and beg forgiveness until he is again able to please that Vaishnava. He must approach the devotee with trepidation in his heart and think that by pleading, praising, offering repeated obeisances, or by any means he must satisfy that offended devotee. Yet, if for some reason he is unable to appease the devotee, then the offender must continue to serve him for many days in a way that will impress and satisfy him. In case the offense is obvious, is of a such a serious nature that the Vaishnava's ire remains unpacified, then the offender must strongly condemn his own abominable action and think, "Oh, how shameful! I have blasphemed a Vaishnava. I shall have to suffer millions of years in the fire of hell." With a heavy heart, the aparadi must then take complete shelter of the holy name and chant incessantly, knowing this to be his only hope. Now, the holy name of Krishna is all-powerful and can absolve any offense, however serious. The offender may incorrectly think, "If this is true about chanting, then why should I have to fall at the Vaishnava's feet in such a humble manner and demean myself? After all, the scriptures ensure that for one who commits namaparada chanting on its own will clear away all offenses. Hence, I shall certainly be again pardoned." Such thinking is incorrect. Instead, the offender becomes ashamed in another heinous namaparad, that is committing sin on the strength of chanting the holy name. Now, the offender may once again try to rationalize his misbehavior by saying, "According to the scriptures, only those who are compassionate, peaceful and tolerant are called sadhus or saintly persons. Therefore, the offense of blaspheming a devotee is appropriate only when somebody who possesses these characteristics is criticized, not for one who has not developed these qualities." In reply, the scriptures state that even if reprobates, cheaters, hypocrites, pretenders, outcasts and wars take up devotional service, needless to say, they are still considered to be sadhus. They must not be criticized for their past, however terrible it may have been, and they cannot be barred from being accepted as Vaishnava devotees, nor can their devotion be depreciated. Deprecated. So, this is actually very clear a position of a Vaishnava, and how important it is to accept that position and to follow according to the scriptures. If we don't understand the position of the Vaishnava, we may think that offending somebody doesn't make much difference anyway. So what? Anyway, I can chant and then it will go away. Or anyway, he's not a Vaishnava really. No. So if anybody had doubts like this here, that can be very nicely cleared. Because thoroughly answered all the questions which we may have about how to deal with Vaishnavas. Knowing this, following this, then so many situations, even within our society, would actually be understood how they should be dealt with, and the mood, the situation in the society will be much better. So, if we wonder why it is that sometimes we do not have such a great taste for the chanting, and even after so many years of practicing, we still do not see much of progress, then we may look into these points, but not into somebody else's. This is for our meditation. This is for us to understand how do we deal with others, how do we deal with Vaishnavas. So if we understand that maybe there are some ways for improvement, then we will notice how fast we can progress. Yes?
I have a question about falling at the feet of the Vaishnava. I have a question about that because I was thinking that if the idea is to submit ourselves as humble and to please that devotee with repentance, then I'm wondering, is this a figurative statement or is it like a mood?
Well, you see, if you know that you have committed an aparad, so you should literally go to the devotee and beg for his forgiveness. So you should now pay dandavas, and now with a heavy heart you should beg for forgiveness. That's literally, it's not like some, no. The mood follows, but the action is of that we actually beg for forgiveness with very humble mood. So then we should go and pay dandavas to the devotee and beg for forgiveness. Even Rupa Goswami showed that it is possible. Even he did not mind doing it, even though his offense was not purposefully done, but unknowingly he did commit an offense, and he took it so severely, so seriously, that he did, and he begged forgiveness that other devotee. So we should not think that, and anyway, it will go away. And he's not sadhu anyway, so who cares? With that, the only result will be that we lose the taste for chanting. We lose the taste for being with the devotees. So you judge yourself what's worth. Thinking that because I'm so sinful that I don't mind offending Vaishnavas, and for that paying the price of being so humble that you show others how sinful you are, or pretending nothing happened, but you will not get the chance to see the devotees again maybe. Because you will think of yourself so high that all the other Vaishnavas will just they will not be worth it of your association. So you will deprive yourself of that. So what's the value? Yes, Madam. Well, yes. If we are not sure, then we should find out. The whole point is that we should make all endeavor to remove the offense by us being very caring. We should really find out what did we do if we don't know. And no, here, I mean, he even says that if for some reason he is unable to appease the devotee, and that means willingly or unwillingly, no, somebody gets upset with you, you don't know why, so you want to not satisfy. So first will be, what did I do? Well, if we think anyway, who cares? No, anyway. So that's not how we appease the devotee. But because of that, then we will be, you know, in bad position. So we should appease. And then that means also serve him for many days in a way that will impress and satisfy him. Now, if we do everything possible and still we cannot find out, he won't say, or he will just be angry. It can be that he is just, that's the nature. But we should not say, anyway, he doesn't deserve my apologies. That doesn't show our humble attitude. So, okay, so then we will just not go close to him, so not to make him more angry. But we should think about ourselves, now how unfortunate we are that we had offended the Vaishnava. That's it. And then the only shelter is the holy name. But in that mood. Not in the mood that, yeah, I did commit offense. Anyway, I'll chant few rounds and then it's gone. Activity is the same, but the mood is totally different. So that will only bring another Vaishnava parat and another Nama parat. So that will just make it faster for the devotee to drift away from the association of devotees. And that's it. So we have to be now very conscious of what activities we do. Because it is said that that devotional service is eternal. Every activity which we do now are above the material conception. They are eternal. But it is also said that devotion can be destroyed by Vaishnava Parat. So it's true that the devotion, the credit from our devotional services will not go away. But they may be delayed for millions of lifetimes due to Vaishnava Parat. So do we want to wait for millions and millions of lifetimes? There's no need for that. Just so, we should become more conscious of who we are, the devotees around, and who Krishna is. Yes?
We already touched the point the other day. If someone is revealing their mind, and in their revealing, there is some offensive, not offensive, but I'll say some resentful feeling. And we also mentioned that the way of dealing with to show how Krishna is operating that. But what if that resentfulness affects us in some little way? I mean, that your mind gets an impression of that. How do we get over that?
You see, it means like if you open mind to somebody, and then in the process, then no, it's revealed actually it was an apparat. Or then, if he is somebody who has a relationship with you, the person should help you. Now, if he says, "I just forget it and don't do," it may be good advice at the moment, but may not be good advice at the moment. You have to judge based on Guru Saru Shastra what needs to be done. So you should approach somebody who has knowledge of Guru Sadhu Shastra, who himself follows, who has such values, and who is example for others. So most likely that person will be able to help you. So if you find such a person, then what would he tell you? He will tell you, well, take these things seriously. Because he knows that if you did commit some Vaishnavapara just simply by closing your eyes like a rabbit, it will not really help. You have to do some activity, some action. So, what are the best actions to appease a Vaishnava, or at least to try to do something about? You can try drati prati grihnati, bhunkte bojayate. You can guhim akhyate prichati, you can also try. You can reveal, I didn't know, how did it happen? Who are you? What were you doing? Somebody told me that you are like this, so therefore I thought about you, but now I find out that you are such. Please forgive me. You can do that. You can invite him for prasad. Nicely serve him. Give him a gift. It's true that these six activities develop loving relationship between the devotees. And we have to start understand this. These are just basics of devotional service. If we are going to be just so much into ourselves, not seeing the others, avoiding others, criticizing others, then where do we end up? Not in Goloka. Not in spiritual world, anywhere. So we have to wake up. We have to wake up to understand that we are here for a purpose. And then by our behavior, we can either fulfill the purpose or not. But to be able to do that, we have to be conscious. We have to be conscious of what we are doing and what we are supposed to do. Then it is possible to progress. But if we don't care, and we are so much just into ourselves, then where do we end up?
So a nice solution would be, for example, I got affected by hearing someone who was trying to help.
Okay.
Giving a present.
Well, first of all, then if you are hearing somebody, then he is trying to tell you something because you have a relationship. Something must be there. If he is just going around and blaspheming, then there is no need for that. But if somebody comes and actually looking for help, then you should be qualified to help the devotee. If you don't, send him to somebody who is qualified. That way, then you help him. If you know what to do, then tell him what to do. So, by advising him what to do, then you did your service. That much you did. So, you don't get the effect. If he follows or not, that's really up to him. But you should not start to be affected and start sentimental but because I said he must follow my advice. Why are you not following? That's not good. So he asked you, and then he is your friend. You tell him what to do, sincerely. And if he is really very dear to you, then you may make sure that he does it. But not because because I said. No, because he is my dear friend. Yes. And if somebody whom you don't know comes to you and then asks you, then you may give the same advice, but did, that doesn't, it really doesn't bother you if he follows or not, because you don't really know him. But you may not be partial in the sense that you will not give him some bad advice because you don't know him. No, you are very kind. But if you see that somebody is doing something wrong and you don't have a relationship, you may come and say, Prabhu, better don't do this. It may not be the best. And if you say, just keep quiet, who are you to tell me? Okay, all right. I'm not the authority here, but no, there is the authority over there. So you may just tell the authority, please deal with the devotee, he is doing something wrong. And again, it's over. You have nothing to do with it. But if you see your friend doing something wrong, your friend is getting into criticizing somebody or getting into some blasphemy or some apparat going to commit, then you may very quickly go and save him because of the relationship. And you don't care if you are authority there or not. He is your friend. So that's above. So that the discrimination must be there. That's how relationships work. You know that?
If I tell someone that I don't know very well, you shouldn't do like this.
It should be, first of all, when you approach somebody whom you don't know, then, and especially if you want to correct somebody, then it should be from the mood that it's not personal. No, not from the mood that I know more than you, and then you don't know anything, and you are bogus. No, that immediately puts a barrier. But you can come and approach, I think maybe this is not the best way how you can do. No. Here generally we do it this way. And if you see that he takes it, oh really? And how you do that? Then you can get more into and explain and what was, how it can be done. Rather than pointing out, oh you are bad, just some other way. Try to not to hurt the false ego. Because then you can get a little bit through. And then if he takes it, then you can go deeper and deeper as much as he can handle. But if you see that, quiet, I know better than anybody else. Okay, Prabhu, okay. But if it's something which seriously may affect everybody, then you should go and inform the authorities. They should deal with the person. If you are the authority there, then you cannot tolerate it. So you have to say, either you do it our way or you go. You may have to not say this, if you are the authority. Because you have the power. You are protecting. You are giving shelter. If that person may harm something or somebody or affect the shelter of others, then it's your duty to make sure that he cannot do it. So all depends on your relationship with the particular person. If you have the power or influence to correct the person, then it's your duty. You should do it. If you don't have it, then you seek somebody who can do it. That way you can deal with every situation. And if you are there alone, and then you see that some nonsense is going on, and then you cannot do anything about it there, then find somebody who can do later on, but you should mention that. Once you mention it, then your responsibility that you had done something or you're supposed to do something with it, it's not there. You pass it to the authorities, but you have to pass it to the authorities who are responsible for that. If you go to Grihasthapara, you see some kids doing some nonsense and nobody is around there, then you go to MCS and tell them, I saw those kids doing nonsense. And then, but after that, you don't have to go to every person. Those kids were doing some nonsense, and that's not your business anymore. Let them take care of it.
social service you mentioned, right? We're taking the karma from there.
Yeah, but see, the problem is that we take the pleasure in the issues. As soon as there is some issue, then oh yes, and then I have something to talk about now with everybody, and then, so that's our pleasure. But that's anartha. We should not try to cultivate this anartha, because this anartha is holding us here in the material world.
Actually taking the karma for ourselves, right?
So is the point understood? So it's nice point to meditate on. No? Especially when we get into some situation when it's very difficult to handle. Then maybe this piece of information may save us from some very serious trouble. Can Buddhists be accepted as devotees? In answer, Rupa Goswami says that the followers of Buddha cannot be accepted as devotees. Although Lord Buddha is accepted as an incarnation of Krishna, the followers of such incarnations are not very advanced in their knowledge of the Vedas. To study the Vedas means to come to the conclusion of the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, any religious principle which denies the supremacy of the Personality of Godhead is not accepted and is called atheism. Atheism means defying the authority of the Vedas and decreeing the great acharyas who teach Vedic scriptures for the benefit of the people in general. So, here the point is, anybody who does not accept the authority of the Vedas, the conclusion of the Vedas, and the conclusion being that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then those persons are atheists, one way or the other. But they are an atheist. So therefore, see, the Buddhists cannot be accepted as the devotees because they defy the Vedas. And in fact, not even the impersonalists, the Mayavadis, they also don't agree with the conclusion. So for them also it will be very difficult to accept as devotees.
But in the given personalities there is a light because they accept the Vedas, right?
Well, they accept the Vedas, but the conclusion of the Vedas, no. The understanding of it, it's different. But anybody, even the Buddhists or the Mayavadis, they do have the chance, by the mercy of the Vaishnava, mercy of the Lord, then to understand the conclusions of the Vedas. But they must perform some effort. There must be something with which they can perceive it.
Someone mentioned to him they are looking for the void, so they end up in the mud of the Gaudakasha, which to this nothing.
Yeah.
Here's a doubt. what the Buddhist perceives as the potency of Krishna. In his meditation, he's looking for the void, but for that he uses a process which is a process that Krishna gives. That much he's touching Krishna, right?
Look, the problem is, what is their goal? The goal is just not to suffer. They perceive the material world as a place of suffering. So if you come to a place when there is no activity, there is no suffering. So no suffering for them means happiness. So that's their goal. So this is where they end up. Temporary place. It's temporary, of no suffering. But suffering in the terms of material suffering. The soul will be suffering because the original position of the soul is ananda, the real happiness, and that's only by serving the Lord. So being inactive, it's suffering. But they didn't experience that. No, for them, it's something higher than the material suffering. But they don't know that there is something higher than their goal. So therefore, they take it the wrong way. So they, yes, in one sense, they may elevate themselves. But, no, where they end up, it's not very pleasant anyway. But they have no knowledge because they don't accept any knowledge which describes that. So they are very stubborn. And they will not follow, they will not want to accept any other conclusions. You see, even the Mayavadis, Shankaracharya, he, in many instances, he actually guided his students to worship the Lord, to accept the Lord as the Supreme. But, yeah, of course, it wasn't very clear, but he did. Yes. But his point was to destroy Buddhism and establish the Vedas. But establishing Vedas to Vaishnavism will be difficult. So then it was Mahadev who appears as a Shankaracharya and he does know what he's supposed to do. But so he bewilders the souls. They disregard the Buddhism, becomes Mayavadi, but he gives them the chance. He shows the Mayavad, it's not the conclusion, it's not the highest. So the chance they get. But how many understood? They didn't want to understand. Even the Buddhists, Buddha himself, who is incarnation of the Lord, then by his association, one would get purified and understands. But because of the desires, so then with the goals, then we just want to get liberated, but we are not thinking what's beyond that liberation. What is liberation? So it's our own desire that we end up where we end up. So if we have the desire to actually find the true Ananda, then by the Vaishnava's mercy, then we may find it. And the process is here. We can just follow the process and go where we are desiring to go. How important is for a devotee to reside at a sacred place? In the Brahma Purana it is said, the transcendental significance of Purushottama Kshetra, which is the 80 square mile field of Lord Jagannath, cannot be properly described. Even the demigods from the higher planetary systems see the inhabitants of this Jagannath Puri as having exactly the same bodily features possessed by one in Vaikuntha. That is, the demigods see the inhabitants of Jagannath Puri as being four-handed. Sometimes we don't, right? No, we don't. But the demigods who have better eyes, they see. Yes, somebody, yeah. Yes.
What is the mood of worship in Jagannath Puri? They are not worshipping in Madhura? Because it says that they will,
No, there is, it's a different mood. It's, they consider Jagannath more like their friend. They deal with him even when he goes on the Ratha Yatra, so then they deal with him more like with equal. And it's Lakshmi Devi who resides there. He serves the Lord. But no, so Jagannath, he's it's his place. So the mood is that all the devotees there, they are actually Vaikunthavasis.
So does that mean that the worship of Jagannath Padadeva and Subhadra is more on friendship than on reverence?
Well, by the Pandas, then yes, you may say so. But that doesn't change anything on us. Because we go and we worship Jagannath as, how did Jagannath become Jagannath? Right? It's a Vrindavan Lila. So there is very deep, emotional pastime behind how actually Lord took the form of Jagannath. And about Ratha Yatra. So that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established that we as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, for us Jagannath worship is so important. But we worship Jagannath a certain way, and let the Damvasis in Jagannath Puri worship them his own way. Brijvasis, they deal with Krishna a certain way, but we still respect them. But we don't take up the mood unless we become a Brijvasi. So we are not trying to judge, not trying to question their activities. Because we don't have the right, we don't have the understanding of what is going on. And if we act in ignorance, then we will be in ignorance and we will create havoc. But we are responsible for our development and also for those who are under our shelter. So then we have to properly train those, protect and explain all these. Otherwise, we will be in trouble. So what we should do when we go to the dham, we should first of all treat every being there, be it a human being or animal or an insect, as a Dhamvasi. It doesn't mean that you go out and you pay obeisance to every ant. But we don't have to step on every ant. In fact, we can look and avoid stepping on ants. And if we have some personal problem with someone like Brijbasi, then avoid their association. Meaning, you respect, but just don't go too close, so then they don't get angry with you, and then you create some difficulties. And if you do something, then take the step ahead, and then go and apologize. Now, I remember myself, once I was dealing, I was buying something, and somehow, something happened, and one of the shopkeepers, then he got angry. I didn't know why. I don't know what was he thought that the deal was different, and anyway, something fall through, and then didn't happen, so he got really upset. Then I could have always say, well, I was right anyway, so just forget it, But myself, then I went to, I bought some cake, then brought him the cake, and then just asked for forgiveness. And then he was all happy, and no, nothing happened, no problem, and this, that. Then, I was happy that it happened this way. But, so sometimes it takes just a little, sometimes just a word. A word can create a havoc, but a word can fix it. So, it's the mood which we have to understand what we are trying to do. Then we can progress in our devotional service. Otherwise, how can we do it? We keep constantly thinking about ourselves at the center of the universe and then not consider anybody else as worth it of our attention. We cannot survive this way. We will be crushed. But even the crashing, it's good. The crash, it's Lord's mercy. There is another verse in which Krishna himself, he says that a person who surrenders to Krishna, Krishna gives him special favor. And that favor is that he sends calamities on that person. He makes his friends to go away from him. He makes him poor. And Krishna calls this as a special mercy. We may not understand how it is special mercy. What is this? What kind of God is he? What kind of friend is he? What is he saying like this? We may try to, that way question Krishna. Nonetheless, it is a special mercy of the Lord if he can put us in a situation in which we will be in difficulty. But he will not do that unless we are surrendered. Because when we are surrendered, then based on faith, then we can do that and accept it without questioning. But if we don't have such a strong faith, then the faith has to be still first developed before Krishna will take step like that. So we should be very careful also to criticize devotees who are in difficulties. We may see devotees who are suffering. We should not think that, oh, they are suffering because they are very sinful and good for them. The devotees may be suffering because Krishna is showing special mercy. Consider that. That's something to think about. Yes?
So in this connection, what is the position of the devotee who is suffering and taking it as an excuse to go away from Krishna consciousness? Is it just the fulfillment of their desire to leave Krishna consciousness, or is it because they have to go through the suffering before they will come back to Krishna and understand that he is the only chosen?
What is our relationship with the devotee? If he is our friend, then we should do everything for to keep him in the among the devotees.
And if they don't accept that?
They or whom? I mean, they or he?
Her. In my case, it was my wife.
Mm-hmm. If she doesn't, then at least you should do your maximum now for what you could have done. Then it's... No, Krishna arranged it such a way so then maybe she will be for some time away. But it's of course also her desires, what she wants to do. But you were not strong enough to change her desires. And you are not God, so then you cannot think that now it's your fault also. But if you did your maximum, then at least, you know, I did my maximum, I could not do. But I can still now pursue my devotional service. And if she ever comes, there's no need some no opening the past and create some bad feelings. No. We can still deal with her as a friend. Question? I think the next point will need some more time.
Actually, I have one more question.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that when we are in the dam, we should treat all the inhabitants, including the insects, as the devotees. What about the envious ones, as mosquitoes?
Well, chase them away. You can use mosquito repellent. Sometimes happens that subconsciously just smash one because you are not maybe not conscious, but you should not be like the mosquitoes and then hunting them. That should not be the mood. So protect yourself from the mosquitoes. You can eat some neem leaves, so you can do some other activities or be around devotees who come freshly from the west. Because their blood is somehow very sweet, so then the mosquitoes are looking after dead blood first. I mean, it works. I don't know what you experience, but when we go, say, to the kitchen and it's like on big feast. So when the Western devotees from rich temples, so then no mosquitoes bother you. When they go away, then some may start bothering you. So you have to use some
techniques.
some protection.
What about snakes? Is different, right?
Snakes?
There's a passage by Siddhanta sent to kill a snake. Afterwards, Prabhupada understood really.
But you see, snake, if the snake is not bothering you, like when we had the flood here, the 2000 flood, the water was here, well, it was quite high actually. Maybe. It was at least a meter, no, it was more, it was like meter and a half above the floor. So, everything was flooded. Now, this hill was basically, you know, the only land, you know, around some distance. So, we had different animals over here. We had jackals living here, mongooses, snakes. So we fed them some prasad, you know, here and there. But they didn't bother. So we let them live on the other side. And no, we just put prasad there, no, whatever they needed, whatever they would take. But they didn't bother anybody. We didn't bother them. They didn't bother anybody. As the water went down, then they went away. So we are not hunting them. But if there would be some disturbance, then it's our responsibility to protect. If a snake makes a hole somewhere where not many people are passing by, so then you don't want him to be there. So, and if there is no other way, then no, you may need to kill it, because it's your responsibility to protect, to give shelter, if you are a responsible person. But if he is somewhere in the jungle and you see a snake and he's not bothering you, why do you have to bother him? I also heard the same flood, 2000, then nearby somewhere, then people had to go on trees. There was Ganga everywhere, and they were living on the trees for a few days. So I heard that one family was living on a tree, and there was a cobra on the other side of the tree. So they had to live on the same tree. But nobody bothered anybody. When the water went down, and then the snake went away. You see, even the animals have dignity. It's very difficult to say about the humans. So, like that. But it doesn't mean that, okay, we see that the snake is not bothering, let's play with him. Then of course you get, same like with the monkeys, you go to Vrindavan, you don't bother the monkeys, you don't notice, you just don't bother with them. It's very likely that they will not bother you. But if you are trying to feed them, be nice to them, they will do some mischief. And if you are nasty to them, they definitely will do. So the best is just ignore them. That's the best policy. You have to protect, right? Don't wear sunglasses, no, don't wear, no, whatever you have, don't wear anything open, cover your, no, if you have some prasad.
Like if you're playing, and they
will be. But they will look for things, they will look for something which they can, or take your shoes and bite them, no. So they already will create so much. But if you are trying to be nasty to them, they are not really afraid. They will follow you. They will do something really bad to you. Why? No. Just leave them alone.
Yeah, if you are like the chadar with no glasses.
And if you carry anything, then just put it under chadar, no? And just keep it. They will not bother. But if they see that you have a bunch of bananas, and even like in some plastic bag, they will just rip it and take it away. So you have to be smarter than them. And they are quite smart.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.